me forever. Somehow it just couldn't be. Congratulations to someone, but I wish that that someone was me. Didn't I kiss you often enough? Didn't I hold you tight? Why did you leave me here by myself, crying alone in the night? I thought you'd love me forever. Somehow it just couldn't be. Congratulations to someone, but I wish that that someone was me. I wish that that someone was me.
Three, my daddy said, baby, come here to me. Now things may come, things may go, but here's one thing that you've got to know.
Take what you do.
It's the way that you do it.
Take what you do.
It's the way that you do it.
Take what you do.
It's the way that you do it. That's what gets results.
Take what you do.
Oh, it's the way that you do it.
Take what you do.
It's the way that you do it.
Take what you do.
It's the way that you do it. That's what gets results. You can try hard, don't mean a thing. Take it easy, breezy. Crazy baby, swing it.
What you do.
It's the way that you do it.
Take what you do.
It's the way that you do it.
Take what you do.
It's the way that you do it. That's what gets results. That you do it.
Take what you do.
Oh, it's the way that you do it.
Take what you do.
It's the way that you do it. That's what gets results. Listen to me.
Take what you do.
It's the way that you do it.
Take what you do.
It's the way that you do it.
Take what you do.
It's the way that you do it. That's what gets results.
Thank you. July 9th, 2025. Call the meeting to order, and we'd like to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay, before we start, we have an announcement from our Spanish interpreter, Viviana Marzano.
Buenas noches, tenemos interpretación al español disponible si alguien prefiere. Aquí tengo auriculares. Good evening, we have interpretation into Spanish if anybody prefers. We have headsets over here. Thank you, gracias.
Thank you. Next, we have the public forum. It's the time where the members of the public have an opportunity to comment on any non-agenda item. Do we have anybody here to speak for public forum?
Madam Chair, I think we also want to do a roll call.
Oh, sorry, roll call.
Yes, Commissioner Maynard?
Present.
Commissioner Penniman?
Present.
Commissioner Sorokin? Vice Chair Miller?
Yes, here.
And Chair Fullerton?
Present. Okay. Now we have public forum. Do we have any speakers for public forum?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I have not received any speaker slips for public forum. If any members on Zoom wish to speak, please raise your hand and we will call upon you. And Madam Chair, I'm seeing none.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any amendments or adjustments to the agenda?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would suggest that we take item C1 first tonight. It's the shortest item and involves public works staff, and we'd like to allow them to go on with their evening.
Okay. Can we have item C1 read into the record?
Yes, that's item C1, general plan conformance finding for the capital improvement program, fiscal year 2025 to 2026.
Do we have a staff report?
Oh, no. Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. I'm Molly Cunningham. I work in advanced planning. And tonight we're presenting, once I pull it up, we will present it. Do I pull it up?
Yeah, so go ahead and hit slideshow or presentation mode. Yeah. Exit out of here. Yeah, minimize. You can close this. And then hit share. And then screen one.
Perfect. Thank you. Hello again. Tonight we're going to present the general plan conformance findings for the capital improvement projects for 2025 and 2026. And I'm joined here tonight by Teresa Lopes, Senior Project Manager in Public Works, and Ann Wells, who is the Advanced Planning Manager. This item is a joint planning and public works effort, so we're joined by both of them tonight for any questions that you may have. The Commission is required under Government Code to review the CIP for conformity with the general plan. The Government Code also requires that the Commission review these findings in advance of the City Council adopting the budget for fiscal year 2025 and 2026. The CIP is a budgeting and strategic planning tool used to assess the infrastructure needs of the community. We have reviewed the fiscal year 2025 and 2026 CIP list and found that it is in conformance with the general plan. The full list of CIPs can be found in Exhibit A of your staff report, as well as Attachment 1 being the resolution in your staff report. I'll now pass over the presentation to Teresa Lopes, who will give the rest of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. So this slide, I'd like to remind everybody of the CIP project delivery process, which applies to all of our capital improvement program projects. And it begins with our conceptual design phase, which is usually our planning and scoping phase, where we the idea of projects come together. The next phase would be environmental review, which includes environmental studies and development of the environmental document for the project. And then the project progresses into design. And during the design phase, we also look at any right-of-way acquisitions that may be necessary. And finally, the project will go to construction, where it's built. On this slide highlights some of our active CIP projects for fiscal year 25-26. And these are some of the active projects which are in the final design or construction phase. I'd like to highlight a few of them, including starting with Project Connect, which if anybody's been out in the Old Town area by Hollister and State Route 217, you've seen this project, which is currently in construction. We are currently in the second stage of the project construction. We're working on the second half of the bridge over San Jose Creek. This project is anticipated to be complete in spring of 2027. The next project, 9006, the San Jose Creek Multipurpose Path Project. And this project is going to begin construction soon. We opened bids last week, and the project will be going to council for award in August, with construction anticipated to begin in the fall. Another project, Matilda Park Improvements. This is a project that will be going out to bid this month, with construction anticipated in the fall of this year. And then two other projects of interest are 2025 Arterial Pavement Project. This is going to council for award this month, with construction beginning this summer, and our 2025 residential pavement project, which will be going out to bid by the end of this month, with construction beginning later this summer. And the last one I'd like to highlight is the traffic signal upgrade. This is citywide traffic signal upgrades, which will be going out to bid by the end of this month, again going to construction later this summer. And this project is partially funded by the Highway Safety Improvement Program grant. And then this next slide shows highlights some of our projects which are in design or conceptual design, highlighting the Vision Zero Action Plan, and then also the 2026 Annual Pavement Rehabilitation Project and our 2026 Annual Concrete Improvement Project. And finally, on this slide, these are some of our projects, our CIP projects, which were recently completed, including some emergency repair projects such as Newport Drive Culvert Repair, our Elwood Mesa Emergency Access Road Repair Project, and Evergreen Park Drainage Repair Project. And then also completed this year were the annual 2024 Miscellaneous Concrete Repair Project and Pavement Rehabilitation Project. And with that, I'll turn it back over.
The full recommendation for your consideration tonight can be found in your staff report. And that concludes our presentation, and we're happy to take any questions that you may have.
Okay, thank you. So do any commissioners have any questions for staff? Seeing no questions. Okay, do we have any public comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've not received any speaker slips. If any participants on Zoom wish to speak, please raise your hand and we will call upon you. And Madam Chair, I am seeing none.
Okay, then. So let's close the public comment and go to kind of comments. Do we have any comments from any commissioners? Commissioner Pennyman?
Sure. I've reviewed the list, and it all looks good. Some great projects coming down.
Anybody else? Commissioner Maynard?
I concur, and just very proud of the city for all the great work that y'all are doing, and excited to see these projects coming forward. So thank you for your hard work. And with that, I'd be open to proposing a motion if you're open to hearing one. Sure. Okay. Wonderful. So I would like to make a motion to adopt resolution number 25, entitled Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, finding the fiscal year 2025-2026 capital improvement program is in conformance with the Goleta General Plan, Coastal Land Use Plan, pursuant to section 65401 of the Government Code, and finding the determination to be exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act.
Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, can we get a roll call vote?
Yes, Commissioner Maynard?
Yes.
Commissioner Penniman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Miller?
Yes.
And Chair Fullerton?
Yes. Okay, motion approved. Now we're going to move to the administrative agenda. Can you read item A1 into the...
Yes, that record? Is item A1, approval of the Planning Commission meeting minutes of April 28th, 2025.
Okay, so we don't have any kind of staff report for this, right? Do we? I'm sorry. We don't have any kind of staff report or anything. It's been a while since we reviewed these. Do we just ask for questions if we have any questions? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Is there public comment for this as well?
For the administrative agenda, yeah. Yes.
Okay. Do we have any questions from commissioners? No? Do we have any public comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've not received any speaker slips, and if any members on Zoom wish to speak, please raise your hand and we will call upon you. And Madam Chair, I'm seeing none.
Okay, do we have any comments or a motion?
A motion to approve the minutes.
Do we have a second?
I will second.
We get a roll call vote?
Yes. Commissioner Maynard?
Yes.
Commissioner Penniman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Miller?
I will abstain because I was not here for that meeting.
Chair Fullerton?
Yes. Okay, motion approved. Okay, now we're going to move to item B1. Can you read that into the record, please?
Yes, that is item B1, proposed general plan amendment and zoning map ordinance amendment for property located at 6483, 6485, 6487, and 6489 Cai Real, case numbers 24-0005-GPA, 24-0007-ORD.
Thank you. Do we have a staff report?
Good evening, Chair Fullerton and members of the Planning Commission. I will do a brief staff presentation, and here it is. My name is Christina McGuire, and I am the planner for the Los Caneros Business Park General Plan Amendment and Rezone. The project before you is located at 6483, 6485, 6487, 6489 Cai Real. I have an aerial image for you so you can locate it. It is located on the southeast of the Cai Real Los Caneros roundabout. On this slide is the aerial view of the parcel. The subject parcel is bounded by Cai Real to the north, California Highway Patrol Station to the east, Highway 101 to the south, and Los Caneros Road to the west. The land use designation currently is office institutional, and the request is to change the general plan land use and zoning map to business park. This can expand the range of uses that could be allowed, plus allow existing non-conforming businesses to become conforming uses. There are differences between the two zones, but are generally pretty similar uses in the office, institutional, and business park zones. This was an applicant-initiated request. No physical development is proposed or modifications to the existing buildings are requested. So it's purely a general plan amendment and zoning map change. If the request is approved, the general plan land use designation map would look like this. The dark purple showing business park. And the next slide, please. If it's approved, the zoning map change would look like this. City Council is the decision-making body for general plan amendments. Planning Commission is required to review and make a recommendation at a noticed public hearing. State law AB 2904 requires that general plan amendments have a 20-day notice prior to consideration, which the city has completed. A general plan amendment initiation process was reviewed by the City Council on October 14, 2024. The purpose of a general plan amendment initiation allows for early public input, affords the City Council the opportunity to deny initiation of processing the general plan amendment, and provides direction to staff. In all cases, initiation of a general plan amendment by the City Council does not mean or imply that a requested amendment will be approved. In the time since the initiation was directed to be studied by Council, staff has studied the application and found the requested changes are exempt from CEQA. There are specific general plan findings which are required. A general plan amendment needs to be consistent with the general plan land use policy element four, land use element policy four for office and industrial uses, deemed to be in the public interest, reflective of the development on the site, resolves existing issues related to non-conforming uses, and could expand employment opportunities by reducing barriers to redevelopment and allowing a greater variety of uses. There are also specific zoning map change findings, which are that they align the site's zoning with its proposed general plan designation. That's sort of important because we wouldn't want to do a general plan change and not also do the zoning plan change at the same time, again, as proposed. That's why both applications are in front of you for recommendation today. It would resolve the existing non-conforming use status of some uses found on the property, change the zoning for the site to one that is more appropriate, BP, based on the uses occurring on the property, along with the existing building configurations, than with the existing zoning, which is office and institutional. Should be consistent with the good zoning practices, as it would align the property's zoning designation with its best use, given its size, history, and internal configurations. Staff does believe that all of these findings can be made and recommends that the Planning Commission adopt the resolution. The resolution is in the staff report and also on this slide here. And that concludes staff's presentation, and staff and the applicant team, is in the audience, are available for any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions, commissioners? Let's go, Commissioner Maynard.
So just one clarification question. Can you talk a little bit about how the non-conforming uses became non-conforming and just the history of that?
Thank you, Commissioner Maynard. Yeah, the reason why it's non-conforming now is because when the County of Santa Barbara had this parcel, it was in the commercial service zoning district. And when the city adopted our general plan in 2006, we didn't have that. So it was adopted in as part of the general plan in office institutional. And then in 2020, when we adopted the zoning ordinance, so it was one of these cases where it was split from a general plan, which wasn't consistent with the zoning. And so in 2020, the zoning was changed to IO, office institutional, which it is today. So that's how that came about.
So the existing non-conforming uses were allowed in the commercial service, and that's when those businesses started?
Is it correct? Hi. Okay. If I can answer that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Maynard and Planning Commissioners, Lisa Prossy, current planning manager, I can shed a little light on that. As Ms. McGuire shared, there was the CS zoning and general plan, the CS zoning and the office institutional general plan designation, and about 12 years ago, we were starting to see these unusual businesses like microbreweries and micro wineries. Mm-hmm. And there was a determination made, like a planning director determination made that they were similar to some uses that were in that business park. And the thought was that we were working on our zoning ordinance. It just took a long time. Like that the finding a location for the microbrewery and microwineries that would be a use that would be studied, and a category would come up for those. Just so happened, yes, that happened, but it wasn't in the office institutional designation. Those landed in either, I believe, CG and Business Park.
Okay.
So it was allowed in OI when it was OI, and then NCS, yeah.
It wasn't really, it was a use that wasn't spelled out.
Not spelled out.
And it was trying to make a determination of where it was most similar.
Okay.
And that's what how it got there. Okay. And then with the zoning code, the use was put in another district.
That's very helpful. Thank you so much.
Vice Chair Miller?
Okay. Commissioner Pennyman?
Sure. Just, I think you pretty much answered my question, but my understanding is that the microbrewery and microwinery falls under limited industrial use, which is only in BP and not in OI.
That is correct.
All right. And the outdoor seating that was added during COVID can't be kind of approved until they're conforming use, which this is the first step in getting them there. Thank you.
Okay, Vice Chair Miller.
I'm having a little trouble finding the exact language, but I'm pretty sure that I read in the documents that the change to the business park does allow for cannabis cultivation and storage, perhaps, or distribution or something. I can't find it right at this moment, but can you can you confirm with me where that language is and what that language is, please?
Thank you, Vice Chair Miller. You're correct. I didn't put that in there. I do have the document which has the zoning land uses between IO and BP. That is on page,
I think it's page 7 of 10.
And PDF page 46. That is correct. The BP zone would allow cannabis cultivation, indoor cultivation, nursery, processor, cannabis distribution, cannabis manufacturing, and the OI zone would not allow any of those things that I mentioned. Cannabis testing is allowed in both BP and OI, and the custom manufacturing and limited industrial are allowed in BP, but not in OI.
Okay, thank you. Cultivation is growing of cannabis, is that correct? Is that the correct term used for growing cannabis, as far as you know?
Vice Chair Miller, yes, that's correct.
Okay. So my follow-up question to that is that the change to IBP would modify the uses on the subject property by allowing general manufacturing, but no noxious impacts. And there was also some language in the documents that there's no, car fixing, car repair, or anything that's going to produce any kind of noxious impact to the property or to the surrounding area. So my question is that cannabis is known by many people to be a noxious odor. And so my concern here is that going from one from office industrial to business park would allow in a in this kind of quiet area right now that there could possibly be some cannabis problems and so, you know, toxicity, whatever you want to call it. And I also want to point out that at one time, I don't know if this is still in the works, but there's that little corner lot that's right next to this property that at one time was going to have the plan was for 14 housing units to be built there. And whether that happens now or in the future, if cannabis should be one of the new employers or one of the new offices in this business park and decided to produce cannabis and cultivate it and distribute it and whatever else, that could be a problem. So I'm just wondering if you know, how that fits together and whether you folks have had that discussion or anything like that.
In terms of cannabis, I mean, it is a wide range, but it's a potential uses or just the list of uses, and these are allowed, you know, in the BP and any of our properties that are in the BP zoning designation. In terms of growing, it is limited to 5,000 square feet. That's indoor cultivation, and that is, other than for personal use, that is the maximum size that the city allows. We also, as part of the business license process for cannabis, there's an extensive licensing process, and they are required to have an odor abatement plan. And the cannabis licenses are approved annually. So if we get complaints, that would definitely be something that we would look at when we go through the renewal process. So while it's a potential, there are some mechanisms. We have mechanisms in place already to address it. We do have indoor cannabis cultivation happening in the city. I can't remember a complaint about odor from them at this point, not to say that we couldn't have a bad actor. It looks like the applicant's representative, Mr. Fort, wants to speak to this, but I'm also, you know, it's going to also be up to the property owner if they even want to lease to a cannabis business. So there's that safeguard as well. And I think Mr. Fort wants to say something.
Quick comment. Steve Fort with SEPS Land Use Consulting, and with me is Peter Goodell with the Tobes Group, the director of their commercial properties. We were anticipating, it was pretty obvious, geez, that cannabis question might come up tonight. And they don't have any intention, as long as they own it and operate it, to lease to a cannabis operation. It's just not something that they'd be interested in doing. And further, you know, with the federal situation with cannabis, in that it's an all-cash business, they're just not interested in getting involved with that or leasing to somebody on that basis. Just FYI, I think as long as Tobes Group owns it, there won't be a concern about a cannabis operation being leased to. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any more questions?
Vice Chair Miller, I just wanted to speak on the parcel that's adjacent. Yeah, that project is my project, and they are still pursuing that project, the 14 residential mixed-use project.
I have a question about the other businesses that are currently in those buildings. Are they all fine as well and conforming to the new zoning? I just know the brewery and the winery. I don't know the other building, the other businesses that are in there, but there's no issue with those businesses and the change.
Thank you, Chair Fullerton. We did receive a breakdown of all of the businesses in the four buildings, and none of them appeared to be out of sync. It was just the microbrewery and the micro winery.
Okay. Would
could there be any, and maybe this is a question for the applicant, could there be any issues with, well, again, manufacturing, and I guess that's up to you, having some kind of manufacturing in that building, would that affect the existing businesses that are there?
I am Peter Goodell, the Tobes Group. It's right now, first of all, let me just back up to a macroeconomic standpoint, but back to the marijuana. We are losing our small industrial opportunities for guys to, you know, create things locally. A lot of them are having to go to Buellton or Ventura. We know what's going on in the city of Santa Barbara with the Funk Zone, and, you know, these kind of spaces are going away. So we're never say never. We are not likely to have a shortage of applicants for these spaces, which would be, you know, by eliminating marijuana use in any form or fashion, we're not going to be affecting our pool of applicants. So it's economics-wise. Also, in speaking with the CEO of the Tobes Group, again, no desire based on the vagueness of federal law versus, you know, cash deposits, all that stuff. It's just not a business we want to be involved with. As to the mix of the tenants, most of them are, you know, kind of light manufacturing anyway. We have silkscreen shops, we have storage. You know, most of the uses are not office type orientation. Heavy manufacturing, I mean, the biggest two that you would say if you walked in their spaces is the winery and the brewery in terms of tanks and materials being moved in and out. It's not really built for any heavy manufacturing. We're talking, you know, 2,000 square foot suites. There's nothing that anybody's going to move in and start doing heavy industries. We also would frown upon any industry that created any kind of hazardous material potential. I mean, as a landowner, that's the last thing you want to be involved in. So I hope that addresses your question about the uses going forward. So.
Yes, thank you. Commissioner Maynard?
Great questions, Chair. So actually, I'll follow up with a related question. So just to confirm, if once this change is made, we would not create any new non-conforming uses?
Thank you, Commissioner Maynard. That's correct. And the other thing, if this were to be approved, this zone change and GPA would be approved, it would allow the non-conforming uses to be conforming, and then they could use the code and all the standards that apply to the BP zone.
Okay. Do we have any other questions? Commissioner Pennyman?
Just for my own information, not really sort of tangential, but once they are conforming, they would have to go through the microbrewery and the micro winery would have to go through the development plan amendment process. What does that look like? Is that a heavy burden for is it that the applicant has to go through that?
It would probably be the property owner because it would be at a site-wide thing. It would be a project that would be reviewed. It could be reviewed by the Planning and Environmental Review Director, or it could be referred to the Planning Commission. And we really would look at the site plan, and we would look to verify that, you know, they would be removing parking and making sure that they still meet the parking requirements, and then making sure that how those areas, if they're using parking spaces, how would those be made safe for people to be sitting in a parking lot and not, you know, just that type of thing. So it is a process, but we would, hopefully it wouldn't be a burdensome process. And the public would be able to weigh in like anything else, and then it could be appealed as well.
Is there a cost associated with that?
Yes. I don't recall off the top of my head what the deposit is, but it is a deposit-based case. So whatever time that staff spends on it, that's what would be charged. And if they happen not to use the whole deposit, we would refund the balance. And it's designed to be cost, you know, that the person who is making the request so the city pays for those costs, but no more than that.
Gotcha. Thank you. Is that something that the applicant is looking to pursue, or are those kind of get rid of those and get some parking in there?
Can you stand up to the microphone? Thanks.
We are anticipating that, yes. You know, it would basically be on behalf of those one or two tenants, and it seems like they want to move forward, as far as we can tell, to date, and probably process a development plan amendment to get that outdoor seating approved.
Thank you. Yeah, it actually has become a pretty nice community area where I've never stepped foot in there before in my entire life. Now we are, and there's quite a bit of a neighborhood around it.
Do we have any other questions? No? Do we have any public comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've not received any speaker slips, and currently we have no one on the Zoom webinar.
Okay. Then let's go ahead and close public comment and open up deliberations. Do we have any comments? I have a comment. I think it makes sense to make the change. I think the businesses that are in there, I had never been there before. I always passed by it and thought it was kind of a funky building with the kind of doors. It is more industrial. It is a little more manufacturing-like with the big, what do you call those, the garage doors. It doesn't really look, I didn't even know it was an office complex, honestly. So I think it's a good mix, and I think the people that end up in that little apartment in the corner, if that's ever built, they're going to be really happy to have those businesses next door. I think it would be kind of neat. So I think it's a good use, and it doesn't seem like there's any negative impacts that I could think of. So I would support this. Commissioner Pennyman?
Same. Same comments. Thank you.
Any other comments? Vice Chair Miller?
Yes. Thank you for explaining some of those concerns that we brought up. I think that that makes a lot of sense, and I would agree that it is kind of maybe you'll start your own funk zone right there, you know, who knows, the beginning of the Goleta funk zone. But anyway, no, I think this is a good thing to change the zoning. So I would be in favor of making the motion, if you'd like me to.
Okay,
as soon as I find it. Thank you. Okay, I'd like to make a motion to adopt resolution number 25, next in line, entitled A Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, recommending that the City Council approve a general plan amendment from office to industrial to business park. That would be I-BP. Number two, adopt an ordinance amendment to the zoning map from office and industrial I-0I to business park I-0BP. And number three, adopt a notice of exemption of the general plan amendment and ordinance at the 3.56-acre subject property located at 6483, 6485, 6487, and 6489 Calle Real, known as APN 077-160-055, case numbers 24-0005-GPA, 24-0007-ORD.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, can we get a roll call vote?
Commissioner Maynard?
Yes.
Commissioner Penniman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Miller?
Yes.
And Chair Fullerton?
Yes. Okay. Motion approved unanimously. Next up is B2. Can we get this read into the record,
please? Yes, of course. That is item B2. consideration of general plan in Title 17, zoning amendments to implement state law requirements and determination that the amendments are exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act.
Okay, do we have a staff presentation?
Just give us a second here. All right, well, while we're getting the slide ready, I'll just kick off the presentation. Good evening, Chair and Commissioners, and welcome to this public hearing for a series of general plan amendments for your consideration and recommendation to the City Council this evening. And the item has been a result of almost a year's worth of work, and it was interdepartmental, as we do with all general plan amendments. We get input from the folks that will be affected by the amendments to make sure it can work with them the way it's worded. And the public input and the Planning Commission input, if you recall, you had a discussion item on April 14th, and the staff report kind of summarizes the conversation that we had with you and some of the feedback that you provided to us. And I just wanted to flag that the reasons for the general plan amendments and, don't let me forget, the ordinance amendments that go with it are to comply with state law, and more specifically the ordinance amendments are implementing the some of the policies in the general plan, and there's also a few of the ordinance amendments that address the requirements of state law and the fire code. So you'll learn more about all of that tonight. And the amendments are driven by state law requirements for the safety element, the open space element, and a new policy topic for Goleta, and that's the environmental justice, or EJ, we might say. So if that's all right with you, we might use a couple acronyms, but we'll try to hold restrain ourselves on the acronyms. Your team tonight is the same team that presented on April 14th, and Andy Newkirk to my left is supervising senior planner in advanced planning, and then we also have Cam Odra, and he is an assistant planner in advanced planning, and then we have Perry Banner, who's our consultant from the De Novo Consulting Group, and he's participating remotely, so you'll see him up on the screen. And for the agenda tonight, it is the same kind of agenda that we use for public hearings, and that is we'll give you this presentation, and then we'll take your questions, and then receive public comment, and then your deliberation, and then an action on the recommendation. So the next slide is a state law requirements summary, and it's the same slide as what you heard on April 14th, but because it's a public hearing, I thought it's worth kind of listing, mentioning that the way that we are addressing state law requirements and the way we're bundling them for you tonight is by topic area. So those are the topic areas on the screen from the safety element, open space, and environmental justice. And those sub-bullets we're going to focus in on with that, like I said, a bundle of amendments or zoning amendments that go along with that. And many of these amendments, you know, both address state law requirements, and they also, where their revisions, where we needed to, we trued up the amendment with other requirements from other jurisdictions like FEMA. So we tightened up the language and the flood map so that it is reflecting the current information from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. And so this slide is a bit of a table of contents. And to start us off, we're going to go into a little bit of background on environmental justice, because that is a new topic, and it needs to lead into the policy amendments so they make sense. And Perry Banner will present this information to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Good evening, Chair Fullerton and members of the Planning Commission. It's good to see you again. I know, again, that as Anne indicated, we've given you this presentation earlier in April. I'm going to keep it light, but there'll be plenty of opportunity for questions afterwards. So just as a recollection of environmental justice and why we're here, The city is required to incorporate environmental justice into its general plan and coastal plan as a result of Senate Bill 1000. And what environmental justice is, sort of the premise behind environmental justice, is that all people in the community should have access to clean air, clean water, land that isn't polluted, and other resources within the city. And really, it's the idea that everyone should be treated equally, and that they should have an opportunity for meaningful involvement in the community. And it also considers the fact that historically, some communities have been disproportionately affected by environmental burdens. Next slide, please. So at the beginning of this process, we took an assessment of existing conditions as they related to environmental justice. And one of the tools that we use is something called CalEnviroScreen, which is a tool developed by the state that uses, it looks at census tracts in all of California, and it applies 25 different indicators for pollution exposure and for certain population characteristics like the risk of asthma or low childbirth weight, these types of things. It agglomerates them, and through some kind of like weighted average, it identifies which census tracts are have more exposure to these, the pollution burdens or the what I would call these kind of sort of negative characteristics or population characteristics. And it provides kind of a weighted composite score. The higher the composite score, the more exposure the census tract would have. And so in Goleta, there are 10 census tracts, one of which falls over the airport. And really, there's the area that is of concern in Goleta would be the area that surrounds Old Town. You can see that it has the orange hatch, orange coloring in this image. And that's where we would want to start focusing goals, policies, and implementation actions to address environmental justice in Goleta. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned, how we arrive at these composite scores, there's a kind of a basket of pollution burden indicators that you see before you right now. For the most part, Goleta falls within the low to medium burden character categories. You can see the green and yellow. But where you start to see the red or the rose colors, that's where it's indicating that there's a higher burden of this pollution indicator. You can see that groundwater threats are fairly common throughout the census tracts in Goleta. But you can also see in the census tract, which is the Old Town census tract, to the far right, that's where you're starting to see kind of a concentration of these higher burden indicators as far as pollution is concerned. So things like hazardous waste, groundwater threats, pesticides, these are the types of things that are impacting that census tract. Next slide, please. Likewise, there are these pollution characteristic indicators. Again, they deal with things such as the incidence of asthma. They look at poverty, unemployment, housing burden, those types of things. And again, for the most part, Goleta has low to medium burden scores, but you start to see that there are a couple that fall within census tract number 9, which again is the Old Town area. And so this is how we arrive at having done this existing conditions report that can then help us sort of form the goals and policies that will be included in the general plan. Next slide, please. So as Anne also indicated, one of the key and very important things in any sort of long-range planning exercise is to do a meaningful public outreach where we can kind of reach out to a wide extent of the public, the community as possible to seek their input. We not only want to get their input because that's how we learn what's important to the community, but also so that the process is relevant, that it's transparent, that everybody has buy-in to what it is that we're doing. So in this case, we had a fairly robust public outreach program. It was as simple as having the project webpage and an online survey. These were bilingual. It was the response that we got for the online survey for a city the size of Goleta was actually fairly impressive. We got 393 responses to the online survey. It helped inform us as we started to shape those goals and policies. There was also an open house at the beginning of the process. Again, another opportunity to engage with the public. We did environmental justice stakeholder meetings, four of which, where we kind of really targeted certain segments of the community that maybe had somewhat of a greater focus on environmental justice. So we reached out to housing advocates, to childcare providers, that sort of thing, and had an hour to 90-minute long meetings with them to get a more nuanced feel for environmental justice-related issues in the city. We prepared an outreach summary report. The draft general plan with those revisions was available for public review in the month of April. And of course, we met with the Planning Commission for a discussion item back on the 14th. Next slide, please.
Yep. So I'll take over here before kicking it back to Perry to talk about some of the environmental justice policies. So before you is the hearing draft. It's an update to the public review draft that was presented to you at your April 14th meeting. This slide should look familiar. It's just, again, a high-level summary of kind of what's being presented. When we looked at the state law requirements for both EJ and safety and open space, there's quite a bit in the general plan that's pretty solid. We prepared a matrix for the public review draft, but also for this staff report tonight. It's attachment 2, where it's not just the proposed amendments. It's all the policies, both existing, new, proposed new, and proposed amended, that we think satisfy all the requirements of the state law, the various requirements of state law. And in many cases, it's existing policies where we're not proposing a change, or maybe just a slight change to flag kind of a little nuance that maybe wasn't in there before. And so so that's what's in front of you, the general plan amendments. They're part of the attachment 1, which is the Planning Commission resolution, which is a recommendation to council. So those, the actual text amendments that we're proposing are Exhibit A to that resolution. Maps that we'll touch on briefly are Exhibit B, and then the ordinance is Exhibit C. There really haven't been a lot of changes since that public review draft, but we'll flag those as we go through the subsequent slides. The slides are mostly unchanged from April 14th, and we've tried to highlight where there's been some change with an asterisk, and we'll kind of briefly touch on those changes, but in many instances it's fairly minor. There's a couple bigger changes that we'll spend a little more time with. But so that's what's in front of you tonight, and I'll kick it back over to Perry to talk a little bit about some of those environmental justice updates.
Great. Thanks, Eddie. So the approach that the city took when it came to incorporating environmental justice into the general plan was that the city would weave environmental justice goals and policies into the other elements of the general plan, the land use element, the circulation element, et cetera. I think that in our study of of existing conditions, we found that the city actually had some good bones as far as environmental justice was concerned, and that if we just sort of shored them up a bit and added a few policies and implementation actions, that the city would be well on its way to addressing environmental justice. We also heard, we received comments, of course, from the Planning Commission and incorporated those comments into the goals and policies. So just wanted to give you a sampling. We did, in fact, make an amendment to the policy on pollution exposure and air quality as it applied to the implementation of the Creek and Watershed Management Plan, the Climate Action Plan, and the Strategic Energy Plan. That was based on some commentary that we received from the Planning Commission. We also made some revisions to the policy that was related to access to public facilities and services. So we shored that up based, again, on input from the Planning Commission. Next slide, Amy. Touching on, I should have said this at the front end, but with regard to environmental justice, there's actually 7 topical areas that SB 1000 requires the city to look at. You can kind of see them as we go through this presentation, one of which, for example, is healthy food access. So we've developed a new policy that related to the equitable access to healthy food, local food, and sustainable food systems. And then there's another policy that's, or implementation action that's going to implement some proposed revisions to Title 17. Those proposed revisions, they're going to relate to things like supporting greater location flexibility for food and beverage sale, and then supporting community gardens as well. Safe and sanitary housing is another topical area, and environmental justice. There'll be programs that will help raise awareness of the risk of lead-based paint and to encourage indoor air quality protections in new developments. Next slide. Opportunities for physical activity, another topical area. Again, the city has some good programs and plans already to work with, so we were just going to make sure that the bike and pedestrian master plan was going to be implemented. When we talk about community engagement on walking and biking safety, we're talking about ensuring that that those areas in the city, the sidewalks are getting cleaned up, for example, so that it's not impeding walking or biking in the city. We have civic engagement, again, another topical area, and we want to ensure that there are opportunities for all members of the community to engage in this planning process in an equitable manner. There'll be multilingual opportunities, and that when it comes to civic engagement, there'll be this emphasis on Old Town, since that's where we need to sort of focus some of our efforts on environmental justice. And then finally, again, just to, I think, to reiterate what I just said, the conclusion in the existing conditions report was that the Old Town area was the area that perhaps needed the most attention. And so there'll be a focus on performing upgrades to public facilities and transportation infrastructure in the Old Town area. Next slide, please.
Thanks. So switching gears a little bit to the safety element updates, there's several categories that we'll touch on here. The first is flood hazard updates, and you see no asterisks here. It's tough to say the plural there. So nothing has changed between the public review draft and the public hearing draft, but just for the sake of disclosure here, we've updated in the safety element figure 5-2 the floodplain map. It was just slightly out of date. They're not significant changes. It actually reduced in some areas with the North Campus Open Space Restoration Project. So that's kind of the biggest change, is a positive one. And then we updated the tsunami inundation areas based on Cal Office of Emergency Services did an update to the tsunami layer. Not significant changes, a little bit along the coast, but not profound changes there. But we wanted to have the most up-to-date information in that map. We did add both information in kind of the introduction to the safety element and then some policy language about dam failure inundation. There are three dams that have potential dam failure inundation hazard within the city. One would be within the city at Lake Los Carneros, and then two up in the hills above the city. And so there's some language about making sure we have good emergency preparedness documentation for those potential hazards. And then kind of flagging a policy to be really clear about the need for coordination with other agencies that deal with these hazards and flood protection, as we don't, a lot of that work is done by other agencies, both regionally and just at the county level. The fire hazard updates have, out of any topic area here that you were introduced to on April 14th, this topic had the most changes between the public review draft and the public hearing draft. And I'll just briefly explain why that is. As we mentioned last time, we got new fire hazard severity zone maps on March 10th, and we were looking to release that public review draft, and so we added some updates. We included the map of these new zones, but also did some changes, particularly to policy 7, SE7, which is our fire hazards policy. But since the public review draft, we've gone through this consultation with through Cal Fire, but we actually have to take these amendments to the California Board of Forestry and Fire Protection. It's this new requirement because we have a very high fire hazard severity zone. We've never had to go through this process before. But we've been working with Cal Fire staff on kind of clarifying some language and making sure we have kind of the policy language that the Board of Forestry and Fire Protection expects to see in a safety element when you have a very high fire severity zone. So that's kind of big picture why there's more changes on this topic. So we've added quite a bit of background information just about fire history, responsible agencies dealing with fire protection, our community wildfire protection plan. So a lot of detail was added to the safety element in particular, and then a little more to the public facilities element in terms of response times for fire protection in the city. SE7 was changed quite a bit. Some of the building standard language was actually simplified just to kind of defer to the state and county fire protection standards rather than specifically call out like a specific chapter in the state building code, as we wanted to kind of have that flexibility as things may change, and we do expect changes next year in kind of the citation work. So we wanted to simplify that and also clear out some very detailed like sprinkler system language, as that's regulated by the state and county fire protection building standards, and we didn't want to get at have something in there that wasn't the current standard. So trying to simplify things there. We updated the reference to the local hazard mitigation plan. That's kind of has dual purposes with emergency preparedness and fire hazard updates. So Cam will mention that later. We updated the figure 5-2 to add in potential evacuation routes. This is a data set that's in our transportation element, all right? So it's not something we're creating for this purpose. And it's a very high level kind of schematic of kind of major routes. It's where you what the roads you'd expect. But that was something that CAL FIRE suggested we include in that hazards map. And then some updated information, again, in the public facilities element about response time specific, particularly in Western Goleta, where there's a deficiency, and that's been documented in the past. So it's not new information, but we're just kind of comprehensively including information about fire hazards, particularly at the request of this CAL FIRE review. So a little long-winded there, but a lot of changes, but that was through a really productive process, we feel like, with the state in terms of what they want to see in the safety element. And then this is just kind of the updated map, so it's a lot going on, but this actually shows the flood map, the floodplain that was mentioned, the tsunami, fire severity zones, and the potential evacuation routes. So this is figure 5, the proposed figure 5-2. And with that, I'll kick it over to Cam Odra, who will talk climate hazards and emergency preparedness and open space.
Thanks, Andy. So climate change hazards updates were mainly included within the safety element and public facilities elements. Much of the language remained unchanged from the public review draft, but I will flag the little places we did perform some updates. First up is a new proposed policy, SE12, for climate hazards and adaptation. This includes sub-policy language on natural infrastructure, like bioswales and natural buffers, as well as cooling centers in vulnerable areas. Also included is support for climate vulnerable populations within that policy, SE12. And as well as a Title 17 amendment for climate hazards to be considered in the development review process. Since the public review draft, there has been a slight amendment to this sub-policy, and we are suggesting adding some feasibility language to this to allow for some flexibility for climate hazards to be addressed in that site-specific hazards report, just so that there could be flexibility surrounding that. In addition, there is some sub-policy language supporting regional collaboration in climate adaptation planning. To implement these sub-policies, we have two proposed implementation actions, one of which would be to update and consolidate the pre-existing climate action plan to become a climate action and adaptation plan. So you kind of, like climate mitigation is kind of the main topic area that is the focus of the existing climate action plan. That's more on like what are an assessment of the city's existing emissions as an entity, like how many greenhouse gases are we emitting every year. Adaptation is more on the response side of climate change. How is the city responding to for example, sea level rise or increased fire risk. So that would be kind of the main focus, the adaptation side, in consolidating and updating that climate action plan into an adaptation plan as well. Another implementation action is proposed to include a climate hazards assessment ordinance, which would implement that third bullet in the SE12 list that I listed out, just the climate hazards assessment ordinance for new development. In addition, the public facilities element just saw a little bit of integration of impacts of climate change into the siting of public facilities. Specifically, since the public review draft, there has been, at the suggestion of the Planning Commission, thank you, some added language clarifying the meaning of social, economic, and racial equity in the siting of public facilities. So, appreciate that. Next slide, please. So, emergency preparedness updates include references to just teeing up references to planning documents, including the emergency operations plan, and to integrate the local hazard mitigation plan, as Andy mentioned. In this integration, since the public review draft, we have decided to add it, or we are proposing to add, more context on the local hazard mitigation plan, specifically in subpolicy SE11.9. And this was at the suggestion of CAL FIRE and the Office of Emergency Services. Regarding evacuation routes, we have a new proposed figure 5-4, which depicts single egress residential areas. So those areas lacking two, which is kind of like the industry standard. And we are, since the public review draft, we are suggesting adding a layer depicting the very high fire hazard severity zones on this figure, which Andy did mention. Just want to reiterate. And so in addition to this figure, there has also been some new and amended subpolicy introductory language and subpolicies on improving evacuation route safety and effectiveness. Specifically, there's been some added language to SE 11.7 that would require the city to provide information to residents in areas that are without two egress routes, so just improving that communication at the suggestion of the Planning Commission, and also information requiring a subpolicy requiring the city to coordinate better with the county on this specific issue. Next slide, please. So this is the new proposed figure 5-4 that I mentioned. You can see the evacuation routes depicted in orange. Next slide, please. On the open space element side, there have been no revisions since the public review draft. But just to reiterate from last time, we are updating the status of parks and open spaces and references to planning documents that have occurred. Specifically, there are now references to the Parks Facilities and Playgrounds Master Plan and the Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan, which are two amazing documents that already emphasize a lot of the environmental justice goals that we're looking to implement with this update. So that was really cool to see. So some of the revisions also emphasize park and open space equity and opportunities to expand and integrate open space lands within the city. And then also tying up open space and its co-benefits for climate change resilience, kind of with that climate change component that we are also trying to address with this update. So that is kind of the safety and open space element stuff that we have been working on. I will pass it along to Anne.
All right, thank you. That concludes our presentation and brings us back to the public hearing and starting with commission questions, if that works for you, Chair.
Okay, yes. Can we do questions and we'll save the deliberation for after public comment? So do we have any questions? Commissioner Pennyman?
First, thank you for the format of, you know, kind of like the high-level presentation and the table of contents, if you will, but then also the matrix showing all the edits really helped when I was reading the actual language going into the general plan amendments. Somewhere it's like, why are we saying this? And it's like, oh, one word changed. That's why it's in the list. So that was very helpful. Thank you. One thing stood out that I had a question on around the safety element, section 1.5, the climate hazard for sea level rise. And the wording for this says, sea level rise poses a long-term threat to Goleta's coastal areas, potentially causing erosion, flooding, and habitat loss. As part of this climate hazard planning, Goleta will assess vulnerable areas, promote adaptive land use policies, and implement shoreline protection measures to manage the impacts of rising sea levels. And when I read it, to me, you know, I was picturing with the implement shoreline protection measures, I'm picturing like seawalls and riprap to, you know, protect against, you know, sea rise. And I'm wondering if, you know, if we should also possibly mention something about other options besides just protection, but things like beach nourishment, which worked very well at Goleta Beach, and maybe managed retreat in other areas when it makes sense, but just kind of leave options open for how to deal with it. Or is that already baked in under adaptive land use policies?
So, Commissioner Penniman, that's a really good question. We have policies already in our general plan that are where the city does not look to hard armor the coastline. So that is in the general plan already, and there's no change proposed to that language. So that's not the intent there. We, you know, if you want to modify that, the other thing is we could remove that sentence altogether. That climate action and adaptation plan would really be where we identify those climate hazards and look at what would be appropriate adaptation projects. So that's really where that new implementation action would really tease out what would make sense. But we do have policies that are strongly in opposition to hard armoring the coast.
Gotcha. All right. I'll leave it to your discretion.
Commissioner Rayner? A couple of quick questions. I know that pesticides is one of the biggest issues in Old Town Goleta, and you have a beautiful community engagement program planned around lead paint, for example, I noticed throughout a lot of the section. Had you looked at all at also doing some pesticide awareness with homeowners, since that's one of the major issues that was identified in Old Town? I know we also know that a lot of that is coming from the agricultural side, but I don't know if also a homeowner piece in addition to the agricultural outreach might be helpful. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Thank you. I'll start the response to that question. Mm-hmm. One thing we work hard to do is mm-hmm. to really look at these policy amendments in the long term, because mm-hmm. we have to be able to adjust mm-hmm. As we change over time, because we have a, you know, long planning horizon for our general plan. Mm-hmm. And something like pesticides, that will most certainly change over time. Mm-hmm. And so we have a few outreach programs, mm-hmm. one very broad, and that's at the end of the packet mm-hmm. Of the amendments. And then we also talk about, we have to do some work on pesticides. Mm-hmm. And then we do outreach and starting with focusing on Old Town, where mm-hmm. you know the bigger impacts are felt. So we don't, I don't know if that like covers your question, but we don't specify what might go into that engagement, because it's a bigger topic that needs more attention before mm-hmm. we break it down. And those specifics we typically break down in the project implementation itself, not in the general, because it can't foresee everything over time. Mm.
And I know you mentioned a number of different outreach groups, especially with environmental justice. One of the key parts of environmental justice is thinking about who are all the communities that we need to engage as we start to look at these different issues. And there was some good language in there about engaging community-based organizations. But again, with the pesticide issue coming up around Old Town, Have you also thought about engaging with farm workers unions?
I mean, that's something that we will take into consideration mm-hmm. as we move forward, and depending on what the, you know, exact, you know, nature of the situation is, mm-hmm. there's no reason that we wouldn't if we needed to. I mean, those are the kinds of things mm-hmm. that we'll be looking at. But, you know, certainly we'll be looking at, you know, the ag operation staff that are on site, and the property owners and other agencies mm-hmm. that track this. And, you know, there's probably a lot, and we wouldn't list them all in the general plan because, you know, we haven't, you know, unearthed all of that yet.
Thank you. Hey, do we have any other questions? Okay. Vice Chair Miller?
I can't remember if I talked about this on our April 14th meeting or not, but I didn't really hear too much more about it tonight. We're talking about pedestrian safety, and we have had some issues with pedestrian safety in our city, unfortunate, terrible incidents. And, you know, we talked about, I know it's been talked about before, with adding some additional, oomph to that to avoid any more of those terrible circumstances, with crosswalks, islands not being, or median strips or islands not being wide enough, and signage, adding signage, watch for pedestrians, and that sort of thing. Has there been any additional discussion or changes to language or anything on that, or is it covered under a different area as in the general plan already?
So, Commissioner Miller, we did make a couple tweaks to there is a policy TE 10.5 for pedestrian safety. We did add in legally dumped materials, and we felt like that was kind of a broad strokes. I think there's mention of like scooters and those types of things. But we did add in language there based on the feedback. We didn't add in like a whole new policy on this. We do have a Vision Zero process that the city is working on, and that's done in public work. So we do have those efforts ongoing within the city, but that's kind of being done kind of through the, I believe it's listed as a capital improvement plan project, but that's certainly work that's being done, but that we still have this high level policy in our general plan that we think kind of captures the essence of a general intent to ensure pedestrian safety.
Any other questions? Okay, do we have any public comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've not received any speaker slips, and we currently have no one participating on the Zoom webinar.
Okay, then we'll close public comment and go to deliberations and comments. Do we have any comments? Commissioner Pennyman?
Looking at the amendments, I didn't see anything that stood out as, you know, strange, or they all looked good or great, even some of the changes. So, I think y'all did a great job. That one point that I did bring up, you know, I always, intentions for today are hard to sometimes tease out in written language 10 years from now. So, you know, I do encourage you to be as flexible, you know, with the wording as possible where we can. But other than that, I think it looks good.
Do we have any other comments?
Commissioner Maynard? Just that I really appreciate bringing up the issue of pedestrian safety, but I do feel like our bike and pedestrian master plan handles that very well as the Vision Zero. So given that we're trying not to create two conflicting policies, I'm happy with the way it's currently structured.
Okay. I don't really have any comments. I think the changes all make sense, and there was nothing major from the last presentation, so I would support this. Do we have anyone that wants to make a motion? Or I can make a motion?
I can make a motion. Okay. I will make a motion to adopt Planning Commission Resolution Number 25, entitled A Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, recommending that the City Council adopt amendments to the General Plan, Coastal Land Use Plan, and Title 17 of the Goleta Municipal Code to implement state law requirements and determine the amendments to be exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act. Case numbers 3003 GPA and 250001 ORD.
We have a second.
I'll second.
Okay, can we get a roll call vote?
Sure. Commissioner Maynard?
Yes.
Commissioner Penniman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Miller?
Yes.
And Chair Fullerton?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, motion passes unanimously. So next up is thank you guys very much for all your work. Next is planning director's comments.
Thank you. Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. I do not have much by way of a report. I will just let you know that we will not be having a June 23rd meeting. At this point, we have no items. We also, at this point, have no Planning Commission items so far in July, but it's too early to cancel those. So stay tuned as the summer progresses. And when we do come back, I wanted to alert you that we will have some old minutes from past meetings that will be showing up on a future agenda. We're working through a backlog that resulted from a staffing change and a delay in filling a vacant clerical position that resulted in a delay in preparing those minutes. But they will be coming back, so stay tuned for those.
Okay. Thank you. And now, Planning Commissioner comments. Do we have any comments, Planning Commissioners? No, I think we get a motion for adjournment.
Move to adjourn.
A second.
I'll second.
Roll call vote.
Commissioner Maynard.
Yes.
Commissioner Penniman.
Yes.
Vice Chair Miller.
Yes.
Chair Fullerton.
Yes. Okay. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.